When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, we've got a big CarCast episode for you today. We're going to check in with Goldberg to talk about wrestling The Undertaker. And our friend Alistair Weaver for Edmunds.com is going to come in and give us all kinds of updates on the Audi e-tron and some family vehicles. Before we get started, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Continental Belt. If you think of all the weird things that you find in cars, and I'm not talking about French fries or melted crayons, I'm talking about live snakes, bizarre trinkets, the stuff that really kind of makes you wonder about folks. Well, another thing that'll make you wonder, but in a good way, are Continental Belts. I bet you didn't know that they're OE in millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, BMW, VW, and GM vehicles. And Continental is now launching their multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series of aftermarket belts. These belts are fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the U.S. and Canada. Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V Belts, the belt with the OE pedigree. To get the full story, go to OETechnologyseries.com. And of course, we wouldn't be here without Dodge. It's Dodge Performance Days, where we can celebrate speed, power, and performance, and the new car smell gets replaced by the scent of burnt rubber with Dodge Charger with its available best-in-class 485 horsepower. All right, let's get started right now. Welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, and I'm sitting in the studio again. Welcome back, Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Matt. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. You were out having a baby.
I was out having a baby. Thank
She's
you.
She's adorable. Congratulations on that. We have a lot of stuff to catch up on. We're also going to tell you that we're gonna check in with Bill Goldberg as well. So a lot of you guys have known we've been saying he was going to be going to Saudi Arabia doing a wrestling match, and a lot happened there. I don't think it went according to plan, and he got a little hurt. And Bill is actually traveling again. He's okay. And he's traveling again, and he's making his way through the airport. But we're going to try to get him to call in for a few minutes to just give us an overview of that match. It sounded like it was a little bit brutal, and I believe, well, we'll let him get into the details, but there was a lot of blood involved, mostly from his head. And maybe it didn't go down as the fans hoped, but
do you know what though, Matt? I mean, credit to him. He's you know, he's the wrong side of 50. He's getting back in the ring against The Undertaker. He was never a great wrestler to start with. You know, I take my hat off to him. He got hurt. He continued. And there's a lot of chat on social, and some of that Bill stirred up himself. But you know, hats off, really.
Yeah, you know, it didn't. I tell you this, it didn't go the way he and Undertaker planned. And he felt badly about that. It was nobody's fault. That's just the way it went down due to an injury. And he sent out a tweet, you know, right away. And he's just like, I apologize. Not the show we hope to put on. And, but you know, that's the way it goes. And it does kind of speak to that profession or that form of entertainment, because a lot of people always say, well, it's fake or whatever, it's whatever. It's not choreographed. This isn't Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible where they rehearse 9 times in slow motion, and it's not that. You know, the moves are still real, and an outcome is sort of determined ahead of time. I'll tell you this. Go to a gym, find, if they make it, a 260-pound medicine ball, and see if you can move it one time, and then if you can, see if you can move it for 7.5 minutes.
It's kind of like picking me up and you together and throwing both of us over the shoulder, right?
One on each arm. It would be fantastic. Yeah. So these guys are big, and it's difficult, and it's all about, like you and I were talking a minute ago, it's all about how you take the blow. It's not about how you hit somebody, it's how they take it. It's a dance that has to be done correctly between both people. And if you don't do it correctly, that's when people get hurt.
It's like a lot of professional sport. When I grew up playing rugby, and I was hopeless, but that was the same thing. You know, you get hit by a guy who's 300 pounds running at 20 miles an hour. You've got to know how to roll with it. And yeah. Going back to the sport thing, I mean, you know, I've raced a fair bit, and you know, some days you storm through the field and win or nearly win or whatever it may be, and you feel like a hero. Other days you know you get taken out at corner one, and I guess what happened sounds like, you know, they had a bit of a spin out on the second corner.
He got taken out at corner one. Is basically what he did. He did it to himself, and it's a game changer.
It's a Sebastian Vettel moment from the weekend.
Yeah. Right. Oh my gosh. So hopefully we can get him, and we'll check in. And it's good to see you again. We got Chris in the booth over here, and when he gets a chance, he's going to flick on our monitor so we can see what the hell's going on with our timers and stuff.
Working with pros.
Yeah, working. It's morning. You know, that's how it works. So what's going on? What's going on with you? There's you've been out. Congratulations again on the baby. But you've
thank you.
But I've seen you keep popping up. You're in like Good Morning America. Was it Good Morning America?
It was Good Morning America.
Good Morning America. You were selling minivans. Pretty much.
It was a great experience, actually. We launched our best family cars, and this was all
here
about.
You are like 2 weeks into being a dad, and you're on morning TV talking about family vehicles.
I'm name checking my daughter to the nation. Yeah, it was a strange thing because actually we pitched the idea. One of the big challenges we have now is this, you know, so many literally hundreds of vehicles now, and a lot of people say, oh, what's the best for my family, and this is what my needs are. And beyond a lot of like the enthusiast thing that you and I talk about all the time, you know, there's a real need for sensible, practical, useful transport.
Yeah.
So we distill that down into 8 different choices, everything from, you know, from budget options through to luxury, and from minivans to SUVs, and we pitched at Good Morning America. We said, this is what we've got, and you know, here's Alistair. He's a new dad, so it's in context. And,
yeah.
And then we all headed off to New York, and we were on the show. And it's an amazing production. 400 people work on Good Morning America.
My gosh.
You turn up at 5 o'clock in the morning. You do rehearsals with directors, producers, sound guys, and so
all in the same day. They don't rehearse the night before out in the middle of the street. And
no, it's all it's the same day. So you get there about 4:30 in the morning. 5 o'clock you do rehearsal. 8 o'clock you're on air. The strange thing is you only meet the presenter like 10 seconds before you're into it.
Yeah.
It's all live.
Yeah, that's how we do that here.
Yeah, three different cameras, jib arms, cars, lots of stuff going on. But I really enjoyed it, and it was a great. You know, you're talking to a big audience, and hopefully sensible. You know, sensible, practical advice, and people have responded really well to it. And, you know, great experience. We're there in the middle of Times Square with people kind of shouting. And yeah. I had the hair and makeup guy. You don't have hair and makeup here either.
No.
Hair and makeup guy came out, and somebody else was shouting from the crowd, "You look great, sir. You look great." And it's good. It's fun.
Now, what vehicles did you bring out there?
So on set, this is actually parked in the middle of Times Square. We had Kia Telluride, which is this new 3-row SUV from Kia, which is a really great. Great.
Yeah,
you know,
cool.
Sometimes just brands just come out with a vehicle and you just go, you absolutely nailed it. I think that's one of them.
Now, we could potentially see a fancied up version, a Genesis version of that.
Right? Well, Genesis is a Hyundai. So Kia makes Telluride, and then Hyundai makes the Palisade, which is basically pretty much the same vehicle. I don't think we'll see a Genesis. I just don't think that's where they're at. I think they're going down a more sort of sporty route.
Okay.
But to be honest, even with the Kia, you spec that up, you can get, you know, diamond quilted leather. I know you can't have a luxury car without diamond quilted leather.
Yeah.
And lots of tricks and toys. And by the time you get an upper spec model, it's as good as a luxury car. And I was talking to the guys at Kia. I said, you know, you get a lot of people coming out of BMWs and stuff into this because it's just a really good product. Then we had the Honda Odyssey.
And what's the cost, though? What's the time?
Oh, from mid-30s.
To what? Can you spend 60 on it?
No, you can spend close to 50.
Okay, well, that's not bad. If you're getting, you know, if you're getting diamond stitch or, you know, diamond stitch interior and it's pretty good quality, if it's got a decent engine and
good lease deals and,
you know,
away you go.
Three row.
Yeah.
You fit everybody in there.
If you want to, I mean, it's a big vehicle, but if you want a good, sensible family car, that's fantastic. Honda Odyssey, the minivan. Yeah, I was flogging minivans.
Honda Odyssey has sort of been the staple of family minivans, whereas the Dodge Caravan is like the go-to for filming crews.
Yeah.
It's like every, like, because every jig that the camera guy has, like, works with the attachment points of a Dodge Caravan.
We've got a Chrysler Pacifica.
Same thing. And it's just, that's the filming crew go-to minivan, and they love that thing. But the Honda's probably got, like, a bunch of – Honda seems savvy enough to, like, we're going to focus on things like – you know, where do you put all the little bits and pieces for kids? You know, like where do you put snacks and where do you put drinks and juice boxes and how do you plug things in? And
it's got a vacuum cleaner built into it, which is cool. And the second row seats actually slide not just backwards and forwards, but also left and right. So if you've got a baby, you can kind of reach around and attend to them and stuff. So again, it's this really, really clever thing. I mean, minivans have a terrible image, but you can see why people buy them and why they work. It's funny, we were talking off air, but I had a Jeep Trackhawk for the weekend.
Yeah. No, you went super family vehicle.
And I was thinking, this is the... It happened to be three on test. And I said to the guys, look, I need to take my other half, Elia, and her brother and his girlfriend were in town. I said, okay, family vehicle, but we can have some fun and go cruise LA. And you suddenly realize that, like, your life has changed, because every time I tickled the throttle, or every time I gave more than 10% of power, I got yelled at from the back seat.
Yeah.
All weekend, it was, this is noisy, this is uncomfortable, And I was thinking I nailed it.
Yeah. I would have made the same choice.
Yeah.
Because when you kick them all out to the curb and tell them to go get a hamburger and you get to throw that thing around the canyons like a sports car, it is so much fun. When you get to make it make noise and test the big brakes, it's fun.
I was surprised, actually, for something that's, you know, the Grand Cherokee is an old vehicle and with 707 horsepower. And I was surprised, actually, how good it is.
Right. It does eat fuel.
Yeah. Like 10.
Well, maybe not when you're driving it. You can't go more than 10%.
Well, I tell you what. Using 10% throttle, cruising around Malibu, sitting mainly in traffic, 11 miles to the gallon.
Okay.
I think as soon as you start using it, single figures.
Yeah. You're 8, 9 when I was driving it, something like that. The question would be, I'm with you that I don't imagine that the rear seats are as comfortable. I think the way that suspension is to make that thing handle, that it's going to be a little tight in the back.
Yeah, and the people getting sick, and it was a disaster, really.
Yeah. I'm not a very good backseat driver.
But I was thinking, like, you know, baby seats are actually almost like race seats. So I thought, you know, I think it's good that from an early age get used to lateral G, the sound of a V8, supercharger. I think, you know, I'm into a lot of sort of subliminal messaging. So I bought her a little Porsche steering wheel rattle, which
I saw
there.
That.
She's
I saw
got a
that.
Little...
Does she have a little Recaro? By the way, that baby seat, that Recaro one's not...
No, Recaro stopped making baby seats.
Oh, good.
I was all for that.
That thing's expensive. You'd have to make some calls.
Yeah. So they've pulled out, but we've got a little eat, sleep, drive, little baby thing. We're going to town on it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that works out. That works out good. I know a lot of sports fans were like, let's just get footballs and soccer balls and everything they play with is going to be some sort of sports ball.
Yeah. Shocking, really, isn't
it? Yeah. All right. So you're saying Trackhawk, not the best family.
Not the best family choice. A Honda Odyssey, Kia Telluride, Volvo XC60 is the other one. Lots of great, I mean, Honda Accord, again, on the sedan front, lots of great sensible choices. And it's interesting, we were started talking about family cars and people said, oh, this will come up with a different list to what your normal Edmunds rankings is. And the reality is it doesn't, because when we test cars, we test them as how they're going to be used. So if we're testing, a Hurricane as we were last week, then you test it as a Exotica. If you're testing a CRV, then you're thinking about this as a family vehicle bought by people who need to carry stuff and children and, you know, are going to use this every day as a workhorse. So you're always kind of adjusting your mindset. And although most people on the team, well, pretty much all of us on the team are enthusiasts, we very much have to kind of leave that, you know, you kind of leave that in the car park below the office and adopt a kind of consumer mindset as to, you know, assessing a car for what its end users.
But the family car market seems like it has more sub-markets to it. Like, if you're shopping for a sports car, other than price differences, you you kind of know what you're getting. You're going to buy, you know, a supercar. You're going to buy whatever, $50,000. You're going to buy the Camaro, Mustang, Challenger kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe Supra in there now. But the family car market is you have an SUV, you have a sedan, you have a minivan, and you have various sizes of all of those things. How do you start to break down? Do you do a lot of comparisons between an Odyssey and a Telluride? Do you do a lot of SUV versus minivan for the family? Or do you do, here's three minivans, what's the best?
It's a tough call. I think what you do, if you look at the way our rankings work, is basically subdivide into categories. So you're always comparing apples to apples. But you're right that, as I said at the beginning of the show, the biggest problem today is choice.
Yeah.
And how do you distill that down into something meaningful? Because if you just come at it completely blind and just sort of attack them, how do you know? And that's what really why we exist, is to say, okay, here's the market, all these vehicles, this is what we recommend, and this is what we would advise you go with. And then within that, obviously, there's other choices and that sort of thing. But we're kind of putting a stake in the ground and saying, right now, for families, these are the best choices.
Okay. Let's do this. I'm going to tell you guys about Dodge, and Chris is going to give Bill a call, and we're going to chat with him for a few minutes. You know, check this out. As you guys have heard us say before, there's no better time to celebrate speed, power, and performance than during Dodge Performance Days. So hurry in and replace the new car smell with the scent of burnt rubber.
Ooh, oh, lovely.
Yes. That's going to be your Odyssey ad as well at some point. I want to get into a couple of other things in a minute once we chat a little bit about wrestling as well. But I kind of want to talk a little bit about the state of the automotive industry. There was a couple of things on my mind. Big tie-ups and partnerships and BMW and Subaru and things like that. So hello?
Hello, hello.
Hey, buddy. How are you? We got Alistair Weaver in the studio with us, and we're chatting. A little bit of everything cars, but we wanted to check in with you. And first of all, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You know, it takes a lot more than me dropping my head to kill me. So, no, I'm good. Actually, getting on a flight right now. Headed to Charlotte. For a little bit of NASCAR stuff.
Okay, well, sounds great. We can hear that you're in the airport, so we won't take too much of your time. But, Alistair, we're talking about this at the top of the show about how even in the racing car world, things don't go the way you hope them. Things don't always go according to plan, and if you can be in two laps into it, and somebody hits you, some damage to your car, and you're not out of the race, but you're kind of got a bum wing the whole time. And for those
who, that's
a
great analogy. I like the way you guys eloquated that in the automobile world. But yeah, you know, it's basically mine is not like kind of. Mine was basically losing an engine and trying to compete in the entire race against the top contenders. And it's just I'm running a 12 cylinder and I'm running on two of them. That's basically the analogy I can give you. Or that, you know, my car was stuck in autopilot and I only had two cylinders. I really don't remember. I don't really remember anything past the turnbuckle thing. So,
okay, so let's talk about that. So there's a lot of people listening that didn't get a chance to see the match, and the YouTube videos, the WWE.com recap didn't show too much, and on Monday Night Raw they didn't show too much. So people that didn't get a chance to see it, tell us quickly, kind of walk us through it. What happened? You versus The Undertaker. You guys meet in the center of the ring. Go from there.
Meet in the center of the ring. Punches me in the face. I come off of the ropes and cut him in half. Then I go cut him in half again. And he kind of moves. And, I hit the turnbuckle at the force of Goldberg usually hitting the turnbuckle. And unfortunately, the turnbuckles have changed since I was there. They're twice as they're not as deep as they were. So I didn't have, say, 2 feet. I only had 1 foot, so to play with. And the construction of it was completely different. Let's just be perfectly honest. I have no excuses. I screwed up, and my only downfall is that, you know, I'd like to continue to try to do the best that I can do in any situation put forward and put in front of me. And, you know, I guarantee you that there are a lot lesser people that would have crabbed up like a little baby and would have given up. But, you know, I had a job to do, and I had a lot of people counting on me. And, you know, as far as a performer is concerned, I don't care if I'm 52 or 22. I still think that I can do it. And, you know, that still hasn't changed since the incident we had in Saudi Arabia. It was just an unfortunate set of circumstances that led to what happened. And so...
So you go in for a spear.
It was different.
And you go in for the spear. You hit the pole. It's part of what you've done before, but a little mathematical... you know, miscalculation. You hit your head on the pole. You bust yourself open. You basically knock yourself out for a second. And this is at the beginning of the match. And now you got to finish and try to stay conscious. And while you're bleeding out of your melon,
over 300 pound, 6'10" guy.
Right. Now and
not get dropped on my head. You know, there's so many things taken into consideration that. On autopilot, you just can't do.
Bill, can you tell the guy, okay, in that situation, did you have any communication in the ring as to say, look, mate, this has happened to me, you know, can you not drop me on my head?
The blood coming out of his head.
The communication is truly, at the end of the day, it's a dance, and you're there to secure the safety of your partner, no matter how the outcome is supposed to be. And the referee checks in with you periodically. He checked in with me a number of times. But unfortunately, you know, I'm the kind of guy that gave him a different answer every single time, you know, because I felt like I could do it. Then one second, I didn't think I could do it. And so I eloquated that to him each and every time that he'd asked me. And so what's he to do? He can't stop the match. He's, they wanted to carry me off on a freaking stretcher, and I won't let him do that. So, you know, it's the football player mentality. It's not the wrestler mentality. It's the football player mentality. And, you know, there are few and far between people that still have that mentality. And unfortunately, sometimes it's not only a blessing, but it's a curse.
I have to say that, Bill. I mean, you know,
if nothing else, I tried to do my job and I fell short. So, you know.
I have to say that, Bill. I mean, I take my hat off to you. I mean, we were talking about this before we came on air. You know, you're the wrong side of 50. You've gone in there. You know, you've got a big audience watching you. You've carried on. I mean, so I salute you. I think you did an amazing. I think, you know, things happen in life, and I think you did an amazing job for giving it everything.
Well, I greatly appreciate that, and the people that I care about and that truly care about me are the only ones that I have that I really trust their opinions. And so, Alistair and you know, Matt, I appreciate it, dude, very much, guys. And like I said, I feel like I left, you know, I let a lot of people down. But, you know, that's just the warrior mentality. So hopefully I get an opportunity to cut him in half and leave him in the middle of the ring bleeding one more time. But if that doesn't happen, then I'm cool with, you know, hanging my boots up, man, because I have nothing to, I don't really have anything to, you know, I don't know. It's a dichotomy. You know, you can't look at your career in its entirety in one match, though you're only as good as your last performance.
Well,
so
I mean,
there
like,
are a lot of cliches here. But.
Like you were saying, Alistair was saying, that the fact that you did continue and try to do the best show that you possibly could. And look, I'm a fan of Undertaker. You've spoke highly about him, always been a fan, liked him. I always thought he was just a great performer, a great presence, a great character that he has. But I'll be honest with you, I just never saw Undertaker as you know, he's not a Brock Lesnar in that he can't throw you around. And as much as I love Taker,
that was the problem. And I think the smart fans saw that and will see that in looking back at it. And it was just unfortunate that at his stage in his career, he couldn't make up the difference because it just is what it is, you know.
Like all of those moves, and you sort of pointed it out or alluded to it earlier, is all of these moves are a partnership. It's a dance that has to you need two good partners. So it's not about hitting somebody. It's about how they take that hit or how they take that move. And if you can't take it correctly, that's when people get hurt. So anytime there's a tombstone, a pile driver, a spear, or anything, it's how that person takes that hit. And if you're not essentially jumping into Taker's arms for a move, he can't move you on his own. And it's tough.
You said that, and I didn't. I'll never say that, but it's true. It's truly the case. And I would never take anything away from his ability. It's just it was unfortunate that under those circumstances it couldn't be made up for.
This is not me picking on Undertaker. This is me saying this is all of professional wrestling. You need two fully capable people in the ring to put on the best show. And from what I understand, Taker did as much as he could to continue with this show. You both did, but it was a tough gig. And then at the end, you just kind of. Your body couldn't take it anymore. You just collapsed or passed out or something, right?
Yeah, kind of like just call it like a domino effect. I just kept going and going and going, and my balance was off immediately. Once I felt the blood coming down, I immediately kind of lost. I didn't lose consciousness ever.
Okay,
I just
good.
Lost my equilibrium.
Yeah.
I was completely off balance. And, you know, to try to...
How you doing?
I'm going to do it. Oh, I'm sorry. Good
to see you. This is what happens when Goldberg's at an airport.
And NFL Hall of Famer, and I'm on my podcast.
Oh.
So, you know... It was, I don't even know where I was, man. I'm sorry.
That's right. Okay, we're going to let you go, but have you had a chance to speak with Undertaker since?
I have not. You know, again, I would, if I did, and when I do get the opportunity, I'll just apologize that I didn't hold up my end of the bargain, you know? So, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Arr.
All right, that's your message to Taker, if he's listening, because he's probably listening to the CarCast all the time.
So before you let me go, I just have to tell you again why I'm part of this podcast. Okay, so I feel sorry for myself for a short period of time, as any human would. I get home, I jump in my red eye.
Yeah,
I stomp the throttle and I try to burn the tires completely off of the car. It didn't take nearly. It took way too long. So. It put a smile on my face, but it took too long to accomplish my goal. So
yeah.
I picked up the phone and I called Dave from Speed Corps. And so now the Charger, as you saw on Instagram, is going under a transformation that the Challenger would only wish to undergo. So what we saw him do to the Challenger is one thing, but what you're going to see when I get this Charger back is going to be a car that when I step on the throttle, the frickin' ground is going to shake. So, so all I'm saying is the only thing that's made me happy is jumping in my vehicles, talking about this new car, talking about new things to do. So, hey, man, thank God for the car world.
So basically, it's the ultimate stress doll.
That's it, right? 700 horsepower stress reliever doesn't cut it. Let's make it 950 and see what happens.
Yeah.
Oh no. We're going not a chance. If it's going to be anything, it's going to be 1200 horsepower because we're wink. We're starting with a demon underside of this thing.
Yeah.
And
okay.
we're going somewhere where people aren't going to be able to reach us for at least a year. So mark my words, when it comes out, it's going to be terrifying, and that's what I want.
Yeah. Well, sounds good. Safe travels. I'm glad you're feeling okay. If you get a chance to talk to Undertaker, text or phone call, tell him that you know, we still love what you guys did, and we're such big fans, especially all of us over here. So good job, guys.
Yeah.
Can't thank you enough, gentlemen. I love you, and I appreciate it very much. And Heidi Ho, I'm going off to see Ray Abraham and drum up a little NASCAR movie. So we'll talk about that on the next one.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Yes, sir.
Bye.
Be well, John.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
And we apologize. He's in the airport. So that's why we wanted to not leave him on the phone the whole time. He has to catch a plane. But
you see, when I grew up in the UK, wrestling was like a thing on a Saturday lunchtime. But the guys were massively overweight, like sumo wrestlers. Like a guy called, if you ever look, Google it, it's called Big Daddy. Giant haystacks. And these guys were like sumo wrestlers that were big kind of leotards. And Big Daddy's real name was Shirley Crabtree. But that was what wrestling was. And suddenly in the US, it all takes off and they look like Bill. These guys would kind of like belly flop around the ring and bounce off each other. And then suddenly it became about these like uber athletes.
Yeah, there was a day of that too. And we'll get more car stuff. But I will tell you this, that nobody's more dedicated to bringing his A game in the ring than Bill. And he's, when he wrestled before, there's countless times, even recently, where he is injured the whole time, like tore a shoulder or tore whatever, and just keeps going. And it's just, and 6 months of training and just trying to rehab it. And he's like, there's nothing I can do about it now. It's going to be painful. But in 3 months, when this stint is over, then I'll worry about it. Like nobody. And I can tell you, he's absolutely sincere when he is disappointed. He didn't be able to bring the show like he wanted to bring the show. So it would not surprise me.
But the difference is when you and I screw up, like, you know, two people hear about it.
Yeah,
When things go wrong for Bill, it's like...
Well, first of all, he's in Saudi Arabia. The entire country is watching over there, and they're having a great time. But I think if you would have asked him 2 weeks ago, is this your last match? He'd say, yes, I don't need to do this anymore. But this is, I want to do this with Undertaker, and I think it'd be great. I think if you asked him now, despite the pain he's in, he would say he didn't end where he wanted to end.
Yeah.
I think he's got one
but
more.
That's the boxer mentality, isn't it?
That's the thing, right? That's the thing. I think if you asked his wife if he should go in the ring again, she would say, I think we're done with that. We don't need to do that. But poor Wanda, she was a stunt woman. She's been down this road before, stunt driver, stunt action person. So she can, you know, listen, her messages were you know, on social media, she's like, thanks for everybody reaching out. Bill's fine. 7 stitches in the head, another scar. We've seen this before. We both got them. We're good. Yeah. And I was like, okay, it's good. It's a family affair.
You've got to go on the journey together, haven't you?
Yeah, you got to go on the journey together. But anyway, good luck to him. And hopefully his melon is in good shape because he's catching on a plane. I don't want that thing to explode. I don't know what he's doing. But anyway, so I wanted to touch on this. So much going on in the car world. We've got, I don't know, like, it seems like the cars we're getting are good. The cars, like, everybody has to make something good now. We can't live in this time where, like, GM is like, oh, we've got 7 really good vehicles and 12 terrible vehicles, but the 7 are profitable enough that we can move on. Like, everything needs to be pretty good. And now we need to get these mashups of partnerships. This part I do like. Ford and GM team up on a 10-speed transmission, right? And Toyota and BMW are going to like, let's make 2 fairly different cars, but let's team up a little bit on that, right? And now we're hearing Renault and Nissan and FCA, Fiat Chrysler of America, like whatever the parent company is, all sort of teaming up on some things. This is good. Is it good or is it out of desperation? And can car companies afford to make mistakes? You know, like you guys are driving the e-tron. We'll get into the e-tron specifically. And it was like, great, Audi's electric vehicle. It's out. There's a handful. It's recalled already.
some interesting stats about the e-tron, but we'll get on to that at the moment. I guess my answer to that is it's kind of both in as much that take the Supra, for example.
Yeah.
There's been a huge amount of tension. We've just driven it. We think it's a good car. It's fun. It's $50,000 isn't affordable in a true sense, but compared to the 911,
everything's pretty expensive. Sure. You know, you can get a Mustang Bullet's $50,000
for sure. You know, the Supra does not exist without a partnership with BMW, and you can kind of agonize about is it a true, you know, is it truly Japanese? Does it have this? Is it, you know, true part of the lineage? The reality is that car. There's no business case for Toyota just saying we're going to build this from scratch. So it doesn't happen. But actually, they partner with BMW. They share a lot of the good bits. They can engineer enough themselves. So then it starts to make sense. They obviously did the same with the 86 and Subaru. So for things like that, there'd be less sports cars in the world if these sort of things didn't happen. And on a business level, the problem is with this industry, it is just too expensive. It's so expensive to develop. And at the moment, we're in this real sort of paradigm shift as technology changes, not only in terms of the propulsion systems. I mean, if you think you go back to the beginning of the 20th century and the whole thing about going from steam to gasoline, and then since then there's been no real change. Now everybody's investing like crazy in electrification, and at the same time you're investing hugely in autonomous. And I went to Munich to see BMW, and they were showing me their autonomous, how much money was going into it and how much data they're creating. And I kind of looked and I thought, you know, this is nuts, because up the road Mercedes is doing the same thing, and up the road, you know, so is the Volkswagen Group. And you're all really just connecting data, and autonomous isn't really a big brand differentiator. So,
right.
So there are definitely times where it just makes sense to share. And we've seen with Porsche, for example, how, you know, the e-tron, Mission E, or the Taycan as it is now, yeah, that exists because Porsche's got access to the Volkswagen Group's technology. So there's a lot of good things about it, but there's also a bit of desperation. If you look at what, I mean, Ford announced last week they were shutting an engine plant in Wales. GM's been laying off a load of people. Across the world, car manufacturers have been shedding people, and that's really tough on everybody involved in the industry. But a lot of it is just this big period of transition. And the Renault thing was interesting. Fiat, so without getting into this sort of deeply into the nuts and bolts of it, but FCA, which is Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, which is all the Fiat brands plus all the Jeep and Dodge and everything else brands, they want to get together with Renault. But then Renault is, I think, 12% owned by Nissan, which is also part of an alliance with Mitsubishi. But the big deal here was that Renault was also largely controlled by the French state. So kind of business morals go out the window, and suddenly we've got a political situation. And what seems to have happened here is the politics has got involved in the business.
Yeah.
And the French have basically said, none.
So they don't want to do it.
But why
is government involved in car companies?
Because they own it.
Because of bailouts and stuff? Everybody needed money, and the government was like, well, we don't want everybody to lose their job, so now we all own pieces of your company.
There's a bit of, I mean, the historical, I mean, the state has had a big share of Renault for a long, long time, and that's just been a function of the company. But it does change the dynamics, and it's all politics and nationalism and everything else. And the problem is none of these companies or a lot of these companies are struggling to be big enough. You look at it on a global sense, Honda isn't actually so big when you look at it in a global level. BMW, yeah, even with Mini and Rolls-Royce, it's still pretty small.
Yeah.
And, you know, European market, incredibly difficult to make money in. China has had a bit of an implosion. You look at Jaguar Land Rover, they've had, a $3.5 billion write-down this year. A lot of that's to do with the fact that they've been hit by diesel market imploding, China market imploding. And then Brexit and all that uncertainty. So you've got like a triple whammy.
Did I read this correctly? BMW took like a quarter loss the first time in, I don't know, a billion years. Like they actually lost something. I don't know if that's because they reinvested so much into some other new technology or sales are down or what. But
it's just a tough market of real transition. And a lot of people are saying, well, we need to team up with each other to make this work, but it's difficult to see where they all, you know, how it all shakes out in the end. And people are saying, well, there's other entrants coming into the market. I mean, we've seen Tesla. I mean, Tesla, you know, there was this time, and it still is, where Tesla vies for market, you know, for market value with Ford, which on the face of it seems mad. But
yeah,
there's all sorts of nonsense going on in the world, and it will be the next 10 years are going to be fascinating.
Yeah, but you know, look, you brought it up to clarify things. It comes down to we need – forget the politics of it and the stock prices of it. But if you want a Toyota Supra, you need a partnership to do it. Otherwise, you either don't get the car or that car is $80,000.
Yeah, right? Or Toyota has just to decide that you do it for purely for marketing reasons.
Yeah.
And that financially doesn't make sense
for them, because everybody's looking at their dollars and they – it doesn't make sense to just do it from marketing now.
No, and for BMW, they get to share as well. So it just stacks up for them. And so as enthusiasts, do we get more choice and more options because of these partnerships? Yeah, we do. And actually, if you get better technology that works, because you've got economies of scale, and the Volkswagen Group, and we talk, go on to the e-tron, because there's some interesting sharing there. And, you know, who cares whether the bit, the air conditioning bit, so not the touchy-feely switch that you see in front of you, but the actual gadget behind that, all you care about is cold air, right? If you put 70 degrees, you just want your car at 70 degrees. So whether the gadget behind it is shared between the Audi and the Volkswagen and the Porsche, who cares?
Right, except when we're all using the same airbag. Right.
Well, I'd rather an airbag that works.
Well, does it?
I don't want to get back in the bill situation, you know?
I mean, because we have the Takata thing where everyone was sourcing this from one company, the same airbag, and the airbag is crap, and then now we're stuck with millions and millions of the same airbag. This isn't quite the same. Like GM and Ford partnering up on a 10-speed transmission allows them to get a lot more transmissions built into test and make them affordable. This isn't quite the same. But
the other thing is, to behind the scenes, behind the kind of brand, when you look at what actually goes into a modern car, so much of it is third-party suppliers anyway. Brakes from Brembo, tires from Pirelli, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there's already been massive amounts of sharing of technology and parts just through the supply chain, Bosch and all those kind of people, Delphi. There's these huge brands that you've never heard of, which are actually supplying so much of the Ricardo, so much of the industry.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that's an obstacle in building these cars to begin with. I just went to the launch or the press event for the new Lexus RX.
Yeah.
You know, their midsize SUV. It's probably the best-selling vehicle in their entire lineup.
It's the biggest selling, one of the biggest selling SUVs in America. In
fact. And it's
biggest
I'm a fan of it, and they made some, I think we talked about it last week, Brad Fanch and I talked about it. They made some updates to it, and we talked about, you know, it's got the trackpad, which not many people love, but now there's a trackpad and a touchscreen and voice control, so it's your choice. You can do whatever you want. But one of the things that they pointed out during that pitch they made, and this isn't a sales pitch, this is, has to go with the complexity of making cars and a little bit to their quality. They're saying, oh, our paints, we had to put, you know, hundreds of hours into developing our paints, because when their cars come together, the unibody and the doors are painted at one factory, and then the front bumper is painting at a completely different facility, and then the rear is painted someplace, a completely different facility. Then they all come together on a car, and even if it's the same paint, you're painting possibly in different environments, temperature and things like that. And they're like, how do you make the car match? How do you make it work? They're like, oh, it's not easy. It takes an incredible amount. If you paint it all in one factory at one time, it's going to look pretty much the same.
But the thing is, like, you and I, and you know, we're at Edmunds, we're a real example of this. We're going to be critical if the paints don't match. And when you think of where people's level of expectation is today, and I had breakfast with the guys from this, and they was talking about the democratization of technology. You get into a $20,000 car today, you expect climate control or at least air conditioning. You're going to expect, you know, potentially Apple CarPlay and things like that. Yeah. You're going to expect good safety kit, possibly things like cruise control, basic levels of autonomy. And that's the norm now. And you go think about even going back 20, even leaving aside inflation, 20 years ago, $20,000, what did that get you?
Ooh, got me a 93 Mustang Cobra in 93. I think we're a little more than 20 years now. That car was 20 grand.
Okay.
It had air.
Just a big lump of iron. Yeah.
it had air.
Big lump of iron and steel.
What were you driving in 93?
93, nothing. I was at school.
Okay. I didn't feel like I was that much older than you, but it's all right.
But talking of it, we're talking about e-tron.
Get
on to that, because we have some interesting stats on this.
This is kind of like the newest entry into the electric car market. It's been highly anticipated. It's Audi's play. We've seen Jaguar's I-Pace, which I like.
Yeah,
I think it looks good. I like the size. I think it's fast, and you know.
But you're right. The e-tron is the first. Mercedes is coming in with the EQC, but the e-tron is the first real, alongside the Jag, which hasn't got a lot of traction, sadly. It's really not selling that vehicle. It's a shame. But the e-tron is like the really big play. It's heavily, there's loads of advertising, particularly here in California. And we went on the launch. We got one in last year. And we put everything through our test track. How much do you think the e-tron weighs?
Well, I mean, the electric vehicles we know are going to be heavier, but there's this balance between how heavy is it versus how many miles you can get on the range, and Let's say if it's the size of what.
So it's kind of a Q8 size. So it's sort of, think Range Rover Sport. It's that kind of size.
Okay. So the Audi equivalent is what, like?
Porsche Cayenne size. It's a full size
SUV. I don't know. I'm going to say 700 or 800 pounds more than a Cayenne, or than a Q7 or Q8.
So what, 3.5, 4?
Maybe 4, 4,500?
So this thing weighs 5,844 pounds. Now, to give you a sense of context, our Ram 1500, which we have in a long term, which is quite a high specification Ram, so it's got lots of kid on it, is 5,554. So it's over 300 pounds, or just under 300 pounds, heavier than a Ram 1500. And this is because it's got big batteries and a lot of the cooling systems to cool the batteries, which is really interesting technology. And gets away with some of the concerns about electric cars. But just the sheer weight of this thing, the mass of it is incredible.
And okay, so tell me, if it's 5,800 pounds, what does it do well with 5,800 pounds? Does it have incredibly good range? Is it incredibly fast? Is it faster than a Tesla? And does it go 500 miles on a charge? Like, why does it have to weigh 5,800 pounds? What's the benefit to the consumer?
The big issue is to do with...
Except for driving through buildings.
Oh, yeah. I mean, or crashing, because actually if you hit something, you're just going to keep going.
That's right. You're just going to keep going.
It's like a tank. The biggest thing is how fast it can... There's some really interesting technology on how fast it can charge, because one of the things is not just about the charger, it's about the vehicle that you attach it to. And this is what a lot of people don't understand at the moment, is you can build fast chargers, but the vehicle needs to be able to accept a lot of current coming in. And all of the heat and everything else, the energy that goes with it.
Okay.
So there's a lot of clever tech around the charging. There's also a lot of clever tech around the cooling systems for the batteries and everything else.
In cooling, it's more temperature control. It needs to stay cool when it's hot and then stay warm when it's
To managing.
Cold.
You're basically managing this ecosystem.
And it's fluid, right? It's almost like a coolant-based system. So it's almost like the radiator in your car, the coolant in your car, but it's keeping the battery at its optimal temperature.
And actually, what was interesting, when we ran a series of acceleration tests, normally with electric vehicles, after you run a series of them, they start to deteriorate a little bit because everything cooks. With the Audi, that didn't happen. I mean, we ran 0 to 60 in 5.5 seconds, which is not as fast as the Teslas, but still 5.5 seconds.
Yeah,
I mean, how
fast.
Much faster do you need to go?
Do we know what the I-Pace did? Because that felt fast to me. I don't know off the top of my head, but...
I want to say it's a little faster. I haven't got the figures in front of me. I want to say, probably look at it, but I want to say it's a little faster. But quarter mile, 14.1. It doesn't, because the batteries are so low in the chassis, you know, you kind of hide a lot of the mass because the weight is, the center of gravity is so low. But, you know, this is a, it's a,
does
it's
it
a,
stop?
It's a big lump of car.
I hope so, because it's 5,800 pounds.
60 to zero in 128 feet. I've got the Ram 1500 here is 132 feet. So,
a Ram.
That's just.
And that's an empty Ram.
That's an empty Ram, yeah.
Versus an empty e-tron.
Yeah. I've even got the lateral G here. 0.87, which is on a point versus 0.78 for I was just comparing the two just because I couldn't believe that it weighed more than a pickup truck.
Yeah, and it's
and
quicker
a full-size
handle
pickup truck. Yeah, and it's interesting as this technology evolves where all this – it'd be interesting then also because a lot of technology share going into the Taycan as well. And I think the Taycan's going to be a really heavy car. So, yeah, it's
but they're
going to
go after
times.
Performance and low center of gravity and less room and less functionality.
And the other thing, we started to look at testing efficiency. So you sort of see this on Maronis and stuff, but not many people pay attention to it. They just plug the car in and don't really think about how much juice you're actually using because it's not like filling up at the pump and then handing over your credit card. The psychology is different. But we're starting to test actual efficiency. So like miles per gallon, how efficient is this electric car? And that's to do with, you know, the technology, the aero, the mass, all these things come into it.
For the car itself, but also charging the car is another issue. All this power's got to come from somewhere, right?
So exactly.
You know, you plug in an e-tron, what does it take to charge that versus an I-Pace or a Tesla or whatever? Like how much power is it using? And there's probably other factors as well. I mean,
and there is a real cost behind this. And what we've shown is the I-Pace is pretty thirsty in traditional speak.
Yeah.
Teslas tend to be compared to other stuff like things, you know, smaller vehicles like and smaller vehicles like the Kona Electric and things like that. And so measuring this is going to be an important thing going forward, because sooner or later people are going to start saying, well, hang on, this electricity is costing me a fortune, in the same way that we look at gasoline and say we're getting 10 mpg or 30 mpg. And it's going to become more and more important as electric cars become more and more popular. But
okay, so what's the verdict on the e-tron right now? You guys are putting it through the paces. You're driving it a little bit. I mean, you could take it to the test track. You get all the numbers, and that's great. We love all those numbers. You guys are fantastic at the testing. But once that initial testing is done, now it's you and a bunch of your crew over there are driving it to see what they think.
We actually have a video launching next week, I believe it is. It'll be we'll share it on social when it comes out. So we're going to give you the full roundup of what we think of the e-tron.
Okay.
I mean the upshot is we like it as a vehicle. I mean, it's not cheap. It's like $80,000, but it's
I don't know. I feel like everything's expensive now.
Yeah.
Just everything's expensive.
And then you look at the lease rates. Yeah. And if you're buying an electric car, this is the other thing is about, you always change the mentality of how you approach it. We would always recommend at the moment lease an electric car. If you go down the electric route, don't buy it, lease it, because the technology is moving so quickly.
Right.
Get a 3-year lease on it. End of 3 years, chop it in, because the next generation will just be that
right.
Much
trade it in and get something. And then when do we start get concerned on, you know, the longevity of the battery, the half life of the battery? I mean, we're not even talking about a used market yet. But when do we start looking at a used market? When are we going to sit here and have a conversation and say, "Hey, buy a 3-year-old Tesla," or "Don't buy a 3-year-old Tesla," or, you know, at some point the e-tron and the I-Pace? Like, we don't know what the e-tron and the I-Pace are going to be 3 years from now or 5 years from now, but
we're starting to see it. With you can pick up used electric vehicles pretty cheap. You look at things like Nissan Leafs, BMW i3s. There's the vehicles have been around a little bit. The residual values are not good, and that's another reason sometimes to lease them. Fiat 500Es, you remember that little thing?
Yeah,
that, you know,
yeah,
you
yeah.
can pick those up for next to nothing. So
don't get hit by an e-tron.
Yeah, don't get hit by an e-tron. One of those.
Talk about a fire.
Yeah, that's like getting hit by Bill.
Yeah, jeez.
So it's an interesting market, how all this plays out and what is the value of. I was talking to somebody who needs to replace the batteries on their Tesla Model S. It's outside of warranty and it's a $20,000 bill. So, which kind of makes sense, $80,000 car, $20,000 of that is batteries. But, you know, if you're in the used market, it's like equivalent of a $10,000 Boxster. Anything significant goes wrong, junk it.
Are we starting to look at how much of these cars are recyclable? Like, what are we going to do with a bunch of Teslas?
With all the lithium and everything else. I mean, there was talk of recycling the batteries for other uses and everything, but there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered. The only thing I would say is this. The market is still only just over 1% nationally. So this is not, you know, this is not, in California, it's about 4%, but it's not going anywhere. People talk about 1% as being a tipping point. You know, this is as more people enter the market, Mercedes, Audi, Porsche, everybody's coming into the market. Ford is going to come in next year with an electric SUV, with sort of inspired by the Mustang, they say. So this is only going to increase, and autonomy comes in as well. The car market in 10 years' time is going to be a very, very different place. But it's exciting as well. I mean,
it is exciting. I like these options are out there, and maybe, you know, maybe there's other companies other than the vehicle manufacturers that are starting to consider these questions. The, you know, where do batteries go, and how do we recycle them, and what do we do, and, you know, but there's no perfect solution. There's no perfect solution to anything. Like, we've got batteries, we got to charge them. Where's that power coming from? It's got to be made somewhere. And then where are the batteries going to go? It's just like, you know.
And also, we still look at, where does the gasoline come from? Where does the oil come from?
Yeah, that's the thing. But there's no perfect solution. You know, but does in 50 years from now, is the Barrett Jackson auction going to be a bunch of classic Teslas? Like, I don't know. I don't know what the future of.
It's a strange. I mean, right now I'd be putting my money into something analog. Well, I have put my money into something analog, and then an electric car. So, my two personal cars at the moment are a Porsche 993, which is my pride and joy.
Yeah,
and then my other half has a BMW i3, which she commutes, and so she gets into the carpool lane and everything else, and it really works for her, and we love it. And she said to me the other day, the lease is due up next March, and she said, I don't want to go back to gasoline. I don't want to stand at a pump and every week. I don't want to go through the hassle. and she comes home every night, and she commutes about 80 miles a day when she's not on maternity leave, and plugs the car in like she does her phone.
Yeah.
And next morning it's charged, and it's just a very easy process. And we talk about charging infrastructures and Electrify America, and all this is coming, but the reality is if you've got a garage and a plug and you're actually incentivized to install these things anyway, it's like your phone. You come home, plug it in, next morning, fully charged, never even think about range and stuff.
You have a Porsche 993 and a BMW i3?
Yeah, yin and yang.
I thought, didn't you just go on Good Morning America and talk about the family car?
Well, the Porsche's got... The i3 actually is great.
The baby's so new that you're like, you could put her in your pocket, but...
It was in for service, and actually the i3 is great. If anybody out there has never driven one of these, it looks tiny.
Yeah.
But there is more room inside. We had to go in for service, and they lent us an X3, and I've had them through work as well. There's less room in an X3 with a rear-facing child seat than there is in the i3. The i3 actually is a really good family vehicle. The 993, at the moment, rear-facing child seat, bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
But you can get, as soon as she's big enough and old enough, which is only about a year away, for a forward-facing child seat, you can get in proper seat belts. She's going to go, you know, she will be, daddy and daughter will be, and mummy will be coming, or maman, I should say, because she's French, but we'll be,
she's French.
We'll be going off on a little drive.
A little trip.
And also you can even get, I'm a real
geek. Like, this is so much better than the Trackhawk. That was so bumpy. Like, how is the 993 better?
And you can even get little strollers that are like going to, there's like one that has a world record for how small it will go.
Yeah.
And I've been eyeing these up, so that'll go in the trunk, so. You know, okay. I want to enjoy these things together.
That'd be fantastic.
Everybody's telling me I'm talking nonsense. I'm going to learn.
I hope your daughter grows up with a 993 in the garage the whole time.
I do. I had this idea of kind of bequeathing it on like a 21st birthday or something. And
yeah,
then,
you say that it's never going to happen, but
yeah,
keep it.
True.
But keep it, right?
Yeah.
Figure out a way to, I don't know, make more money. Whatever you got to do to get the Odyssey or the Telluride and keep the 993.
I think we'll be chopping the i3 in for something more sensible.
Right, because eventually the girl's going to be like, she needs braces and there's maybe private school because you're in L.A.
I mean, the 993 is, I'm very, very spoiled and very privileged to have that as a toy. I mean, with work, I literally have a different car every day.
Yeah.
And that's everything from across the market. So that's generally, because it's a big part of the testing process is just actually living with vehicles. And that's why we have a long-term test fleet as well. It's just living with vehicles day in, day out, commuting in them, you know, connecting your phone up every day, sitting in traffic. We talk a lot about figures and herring around test tracks, but to be honest, most of our work, and Jackie Stewart used to talk about this. So Jackie Stewart, who's just, you can tell a car at 5 miles an hour. You can tell probably 80% of a car sitting in traffic at 10 miles an hour.
Yeah. All right, you got a huge long-term fleet. Hopefully that fleet has Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. You guys drop off dry cleaning. You pick up some milk, baby formula, diapers. Now you can save hundreds of dollars to that car, to that list, and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. Just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you need some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding you can do today. Go to geico.com. Alistair, always a pleasure.
I love your segues into it. That's half the time I don't even realize we're in an ad break.
Yeah. No, we're doing an ad break. We appreciate you coming in. It's always a pleasure. Good to have you back. And we're gonna do our best to have you come in once a month like we were doing before. But I think you're heading out on a trip. Is it a work trip? Family trip?
It's actually a family trip. I'm heading back to Europe for a little bit of July, but I'll be around, Matt. I'll be around.
Good. Are you going to hit up any events while you're there?
I actually land at the same time that the Goodwood Festival of Speed is on.
Oh.
But I think I'm not going to make it down. I think there's a bunch of people I need to see in London.
Meet you in Chichester.
I'm on a royal baby tour. So
yeah, that's right. You got to go bring the baby around to show everybody.
I borrowed a big Volvo and we're going to try out a Volvo while we're over there that we need to have some time in. So yeah, we're a little bit of work and pleasure there. But
which Volvo? Because Volvo is not something we've ever tested here before for no particular reason. We just didn't really have the relationship, and somebody I knew in the car world moved over to Volvo and said, "Why don't you try Volvo?" And I said, "Sure." And they said, "Hey, we've got an S60."
Yeah, we're probably getting an S60 on our long-term test fleet. This is actually a V90 cross country, which I love. It's a bit like the Audi All Road. So you take a wagon and then slightly raise it and give it a bit of a little bit of cladding. So it's a kind of cross between a wagon and an SUV. And if you want something a bit, there's good deals on them as well. If you want something a bit different, I'm a big fan because everybody's got SUVs, but these things are kind of cool, super spacious, super practical, look a little bit different, really comfortable. And yeah, we have a V90 in the office at the moment in brown, and nobody buys wagons. I never understand. Nobody buys wagons over here. But if you're listening to this and want something a bit different, that actually, you know, come back to sensible family cars that will work for your lifestyle. You know, V60 is the smaller one, V90 is the big one. Yeah, no, it's worth a look.
How do you guys at Edmunds like Volvo as a brand? Are they making good cars?
They are. I think since they left the Ford ownership, and they're now owned by Chinese, by Geely, and same as Lotus now, same ownership as Lotus, and they're heading for a bit of a renaissance. I think what I like about them is they're trying to be Volvo. I remember a few years ago going back to the original technical presentation for the XC90, and you know what it's like. You go to these press lines, they stand up and they say, well, it's going to went around the Nürburgring in 3.5 minutes. And you sat there thinking, this is a family SUV.
Yeah.
and they stood up and they said, what we're going to build is a good-looking, safe, spacious, comfortable family SUV.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know. That's exactly what they've done.
Okay. All right. We're going to wrap things up. What can we go look for at Edmunds.com? You mentioned a video. You've got an e-tron video coming out.
We've got an e-tron video. We've got tons of stuff. We just got a piece on the new Mercedes GLB, the little SUV that went live yesterday. Diesel trucks is a big thing going live at the moment. Reviews on every vehicle on sale and some great buying advice as well. And you can look to see the kind of price that you should be paying with, because we offer, you know, we give you an idea what kind of price you should be paying. So there's tons of stuff to investigate.
And for all the quick news to catch up on what's going on, we go to edmunds.com/roadnoise
for all the editorial. Just head to edmunds.com. It's all there for you.
Great. And I want to say you guys are doing something with the Blazer coming out. I want to get into that at some point because I can't.
Yeah, next time we're on, we've got a little thing coming up with a Blazer and a Passport, and I'd love to tell you about that next time.
Right, because I kind of like the look. It's like a swollen Camaro.
That's the idea. We got the RS one as well, and this idea is almost for like the guy who wants a Camaro but has now, you know, you might be getting where the story's going for me with this
one.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, I want it to be good. I don't know if it's good yet, so we'll find out next time you come in. Thanks again for coming in, guys. Check out Alistair. You're on Twitter.
As Alistair Weaver, AlistairWeaver. Nobody can ever spell it. Or Weevometer, just because nobody can spell my name, which I know you enjoy.
On Instagram, I love this one.
Weevometer.
I keep saying Weevometer. I don't know why I like it that way. Go to Weevometer on Instagram. You can follow him there. Check that out. And of course, go to Edmunds.com. You can follow Edmunds on Twitter, Instagram, social media. They're everywhere. And go to Edmunds.com/roadnoise to get all the good, quick editorial stuff. Follow Goldberg. Hopefully he's gonna. I know he's got car stuff up there, but maybe he's going to tell you a little bit about the hole in his head that he got stitched up. Poor guy. Go to Goldberg and Goldberg Garage on Twitter, Goldberg95, Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. You can find everything there. You can find me at Motorator. Guys, thank you so much, and we've got more show for you coming out this week. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.